This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Urquhart from Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming design author and Today Show contributor Susanna Salk to the table. And Susanna has written a few books, but her most recent one that is just coming out, I think this week, is Room for Children, which is a beautiful compendium of some really fabulous children's rooms. So, Susanna, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
I am thrilled to be with all of you. Thank you for having me.
We would like to hear about how people, you know, your past and how people get to where they are today. So why don't you tell us about your life so far?
Well, like most things, I think you get on one path and then eventually where you end up isn't exactly where you thought. But then when you look back retrospectively, all the steps kind of make sense. For me, I always loved writing. I actually thought I wanted to be in advertising when I was like 10 years old. My fantasy was to be Mary Wells Lawrence. I just thought that she was the most fabulous. She had this fabulous house in the south of France, and she ran her own advertising business, and her husband was this very glamorous older guy, and I always thought I'd be in advertising. And then I slowly wrote a lot in college and in high school, and then when I moved to New York after Vassar, I started at Condé Nast International Home Magazine, so I was helping out the international office for Vogue Décoration and British House and Garden and French Maison et Jardin. And then I went on to, when I heard that Elle Decor was launching, I wanted very much to be a part of it. At the time, no one had heard of Elle Decor, really. There was like 23 titles all over the world, but they hadn't launched in America. And I was part of the launch team there. And really sort of was in the world of interior designers, dealers, you know, antique dealers, all the endemic business, trying to make them understand what the concept of Elle Decor was, and was there for a number of years. Then I really wanted to kind of, I had the movie business itch for a while. So I moved to Los Angeles. I worked at Creative Artists Agency for 5 years under Mike Ovitz, when he was really sort of the uber movie agent in the world, really.
So did you work as an agent?
I was the famous agent in training. So I went from Elle Decor, where I had a big entertaining budget and clients, and I really had my own assistant and a nice big office and a cushy job, and I went to nothing. I mean, that place was filled with Wharton Business School graduates and people that were making a dollar just to be on the, you know, in Creative Artists Agency and learn. Mm-hmm. And I thought I wanted to be an agent until I looked, and actually I was the first female agent training on the famous sort of third floor desk under Mike Ovitz's team. And then I looked around and saw that there was no women agents, or hardly any. They were not married. I was married. I really wanted kids. No one saw their families. So I left and started writing scripts, and then eventually moved back east. And I was asked to be a contributing editor for Elle Decor. So actually, when I was in LA, one of the things I did was I helped the relaunch party for House and Garden under Dominique Browning when it came back in the 90s after being dormant for many years. So I always had my toe in the design world. And when I moved back east, I became a contributing editor for Elle Decor. And then I started working for House and Garden full time as their special projects editor, and really began to reconnect with all the interior designers all over the country, because helped sort of, whenever we had a special event, I helped pick them and link them in with projects that we were doing. And I helped oversee their show house, their famous Hamptons Designer Show House 1 year. So all of a sudden I was kind of back in the mix of design, which I loved. I loved the people in it. I love interior designers. And I started doing Today Show segments for House and Garden. And it just kind of took off from there. Like I said, you kind of go into one opportunity and more things happen. And then House and Garden suddenly folded, as we all, I'm sure as you do, I still miss it every day as a reader, much less someone that worked on that team. And so I said to myself, I'm not going to go back in the world of magazines. I don't want to over-affiliate myself with a magazine ever again. It's just, it's too painful if something goes wrong. And ever since then, I've been starting writing my own books. I really, I don't know if you saw Privileged Life, Celebrating Wasp Style, but that was my first book.
I love that book.
And it was funny, I just had the idea while I was still at House and Garden to, I realized that no one had ever written a book that kind of celebrated WASP culture in a strange way. It had had a very intense impact for many, many years on everything from fashion and film and literature. And I just thought it would be fun to kind of do a pictorial celebration of that. And that kind of got me on my way of writing books and doing, just one thing sort of led to the other. And I'm a weekly contributor to First Dibs, and that has just been the best writing experience because I've been able to write on designers and dealers that I love. And of course, with the immediacy of the internet, you get to do 20 pages on someone's work. You get to show them as a teenager now. I mean, you really have a luxury of space on the internet that you didn't ever have in magazines. And I just loved that. That's kept me writing on a very, you know, flexing that weekly writing muscle. So every week, almost every week I write for First Dibs as well. And I don't want to bore you, but that I did weekend retreats after WASP style that kind of celebrated weekend homes that really felt like extreme personal expressions of the owners. No McMansions, no over the top, just homes that people had really were labors of love. And that came out last year. And then this week is Room for Children.
When did you start writing it? Because it came, you know, a year between the two books is quite a short period of time.
I know. I started pitching it at the end of, after I sort of hunted and gathered and put to bed weekend retreats. I have an intensive collection of House and Garden and Domino magazines. And I had been culling so many great relationships with designers over the year. It occurred to me that no one had really celebrated kids' rooms the way that I saw them kind of coming to the forefront of the shelter magazine category in stories. But there was no book that was kind of juicy and glamorous and fun to read, whether you were a first-time parent or a decorator that was about to do a project for a kids' room, or a tween wanting to change your room. And I think
that that's one of the things that is so really attractive about this book, because, I mean, there have been, you know, having children myself, I went through and collected every book out there about 10 years ago on kids' rooms, and they were always really juvenile. They were very precious and juvenile, which... Yeah. Yeah, and they all sort of, you know, they looked like they were good for about 5 years. And, you know, while a lot of people love that look and that's great for them, I was always looking for something like what you showcase in this book, which these rooms are exciting to look at no matter.
What your age or no matter whether they're for you. Well, that's, I realized looking through a lot of these homes in my magazines that, sure, I knew the people had kids because the kids were being featured in the stories, jumping on furniture or posing with their families. I knew they had great rooms, but certainly the editors probably didn't have enough room in the magazine to show that room. So I called up all those designers and I floated it out there. And I just got back such a great swath of rooms from nurseries to teens, boys and girls. We're so, we've been for so long boxed into these categories as parents that if it's a boy, the room looks this way. If it's a girl, the room looks this way. And all of a sudden, I looked around, I thought, people aren't doing that as much anymore. Thank God. We're starting to, hey, I could actually buy grown-up sheets and put them on my kids' beds. You know, I don't have to get choo-choo trains and Barbar and gingham and Barbie doll this or Walt Disney theme that. I can make it sophisticated and fabulous just the way I want my own room to look.
Or in one of the pages, you mentioned putting real art, which I've always been a huge fan of. Put real art in kids' rooms. Why do we have to, you know, I understand that sometimes money is a constraint, but you can always find really great you know, art, go to a university at a senior show and buy it, something from there. But having real art in a child's room, I think, is important and a great feature.
Or frame your kids' art. That's mm-hmm. what I did. My mm-hmm. son, for my older son, when my younger son was born, he did this fabulous mural of a train in this crayon drawing. It was very... Picasso, you know, it was so fabulous, everything that picture meant. Just what he wanted to say to Winston. And I framed it right over the bed. I mean, it looks as good as anything I could buy because it has personal meaning. So if you can't afford art, at the very least, even more exciting, frame a bunch of your children's artwork and start a gallery for them. On my son's room, it's in the book, I got a big magnetic bulletin board. I really cannot emphasize what a great investment that is. Make it as big as possible. Stick it in your child's room. Not only can you tic-tac up homework on it, but every time they come, you know, when your kids come home with drawings and it's like, how do I have room for all of this? Well, you switch it out like a gallery because you've got fun magnetic pieces, and create your own, you know, art gallery right in your own room. It's mm-hmm. so much, I think people have to let go of the rules that they think they have to follow. And I want this book to kind of give you an idea like, oh yeah, I never thought that I could put a hammock in the middle of the room, or a faux zebra rug in the middle of two white bunk beds. That looks kind of great.
I noticed a lot of the rooms, they really do have a kind of El Decor domino vibe. There's a lot of the Le Indiens prints and a lot of wallpaper mm-hmm. used in the rooms.
Yeah,
very bright colors. I mean, just they're just beautiful.
And on page 139, you've got one that we had a guest on here, Scott Wood. It is the Tartan Scott childhood bedroom on page 139. It's really sophisticated. It's beautiful for a boys' room.
But, you know, as expensive as some of these rooms might be, in every single one of them, there is a takeaway that does not cost a lot. That, for example, in there's one room that has all these Marilyn Monroe Andy Warhol lithographs on it with the polka dot rug. And I was on the Today Show yesterday, and I showed you that on art.com for $29, you can get the Marilyn Monroe Andy Warhol lithograph and frame it for another $30, $40, $50. And how fabulous to have that on your wall. It doesn't have to be the real thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, if you see wallpaper, take that as an idea of, well, maybe I can't afford to wallpaper the whole room, but how about just maybe over the headboard? Or, you know, there's something in that I hope to, even if it's just color schemes, there's a lot in there, hopefully, to inspire everyone to take a risk, do something new. It's a child's room, so you get to have fun with it. And it should be liberating, you know, not intimidating.
There are very few in here. There are very few traditionally, you know, dressy little girls' rooms. They're very few. There are a couple. There's one I recognize from a veranda or Southern accents, very French. There's like a couple of very Frenchy, but most of them are casual.
It's fun. There's one very formal one with a lot of antiques that a 15-year-old girl did herself. She saw it in a magazine, that kind of feeling. And she did exactly what I hope other people will do. She saw in a magazine. I mean, that's the best thing about design.
Do you know what page that's on?
I'm going to flip through and find it. But basically, she saw this piece of furniture, a screen and a magazine, that she was sort of ready to change her room and make it more grown up. Her parents bought it for her. It's on page 161 and 160. And she really worked with her designer and did the whole thing herself, picked out everything. Look how sophisticated that is.
Right.
And that will last her forever. So I wanted to show the whole spectrum of very, very sophisticated. But it's true. The trend is definitely no longer frilly, frilly, formal. It is more casual and inventive, and a lot of stress on accessories doing the talking, which I think is great because that's a lot cheaper than investing in huge expensive pieces of furniture. And what we really forget, which I really want to stress, which is why I think the book is important, is that when you're a first-time parent, you think, oh, my nursery is so perfect, it's going to be this way forever, and then 5 months later that crib isn't the main focus anymore, that the rooms have to grow with your child, and it's expensive and challenging. And I remember the day that my son wanted to take down his whole Lego village that we had glued on this beautiful display in the middle of his room, because Lego was our world 24/7. And then one day he woke up and he said, I really want to get rid of it. And I had to walk out of the room and bite my lip from bursting into tears, because I wanted to kind of support him in, you know, this new stage. But it killed me to take apart that Lego. It was very symbolic. But we have to
relate to what you're saying, because my daughter has, you know, herself changed her room majorly several times. And the last time she wanted to do West Elm, you know, it was like, oh my God, it was so not me. My mother called it the purple bordello. It was so awful, but it was my daughter, you know?
Honey, your complaint, you got off easy. West Elm, my kids want to do, in fact, my younger son wants to have, it's called Fatheads. Have you heard of those?
No.
They're posters. You can get them of sport figures. They're removable decals that stretch across.
I know what those are. I saw that. Awful. Yeah.
Here I have these sport
decals.
Yes. Do you think I want to look at Derek Jeter or Heather Conquest 60 feet by 50 feet?
So, Susanna, what are you going to do? Are you going to acquiesce?
They had those on in their room. A girl had them.
These are girl versions. Yeah, I'm sure there's girl versions. Well, it's interesting for my younger son. And meanwhile, he loves Japanese art also. He's like very different sides of his brain. So, I've kind of gotten away with, you know what, I get him those little bobblehead sports figures and I line them all up on his desk in kind of an artful, I appease him in other ways. I thank God put off the fat heads for now. But my other son took down the groovy mirror that I had up from a flea market and he's put up movie posters. He's a day student at a boarding school and he sees in the dorm rooms all the kids love to put up movies. I like to put up ads. I mean, that's what you do. And I thought, you know what? Bite your lip. I know it's going to not look the way you want it to, but you cannot. He wants to express himself. Let him get. And he was so thrilled. He put them up. And I just, that's the way the room's going to look for a couple of years. You know?
It makes me wonder about these rooms. You know, they were probably, the pictures were taken early on because the children do, you know, it's their sanctuary, and they cannot have a designed room and not touch it. It just doesn't work that way.
But I do feel that I feel that all the rooms in the book, I find it refreshing that there's a great mix of grown-up world and child world, and that, as I said, we're relaxing about the boundaries of what can and can't be in all the rooms in our house. This sort of revolution in kids' design, I think, has only happened because overall we are more understanding now about mixing high and low, and it's okay to put something from Target next to your grandmother's antique chair. This is all coming from that, just the way that 10 years ago we sort of started understanding that you could wear a Chanel jacket even 15, 20 years ago, with blue jeans. I mean, it's all sort of, shaking down and, you know, affecting all how we live, that we, it doesn't have to be all one look anymore.
And I think that with all the design blogs and the magazines out there, I mean, I this is no news, but people are a lot more aware of generally the population in general with the TV shows and everything are just being exposed to so much more. And like with anything, the more you're exposed, the more, you know, you become interested and realize that things are out there for you. You know, the mix, the Target, the mix with
all,
the flea market.
All the possibilities, exactly. It's just...
And I think with all the TV shows, the kids are more aware. So a friend of mine is in the process of selling her house, and she's a six-year-old son who is very builder-oriented, and he loves the DIY network, apparently. And he's been, like, putting his opinion in as to what they should do to stage the house to sell.
You know, I love that. Yeah. That makes me... That warms my heart. I mean, I just think that's... The days of sort of the rumpus room down in the basement and regulating kids to sanctioned off areas where they could and could not go is so over. And I just think that's wonderful. My husband's late father was a well-known child psychologist. And growing up, he said that he sort of proclaimed that he wanted to put his best stuff in the house out and to have it be displayed and have Eric, my husband, his son, understand the importance of living with beautiful things. And if something broke, it was okay. But certainly hiding it and putting it away or high up on a shelf wasn't going to teach him how to appreciate living with great design. And he had it out and about, and he used all the expensive plates and glasses, and that's how Eric grew up with it. And how refreshing is that?
I think also this is a great book for to get your hands on if you do have, because I have two girls who really want to, they have a lot of say in how their rooms look. And this, at least, if I can show them these pictures, I can say, go through these pictures, you know, and see the elements that you like in these rooms, pick your favorite, you know, take a sticky note on the page you want.
That's exactly what I wanted to happen.
This is perfect for that.
I would love, let me just find the picture. There's, it was in Domino. It was three sisters. And
yes.
They're all looking, and there's the black and white photo, and they're between the two of us.
What page is that?
99. There are so many, 99?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so there, oh, by the way, we didn't show, they also had a huge room with swings hanging from the ceiling.
I have that whole page pulled, yes.
But what I love about that room is there's so many ideas there. First of all, just the white butterflies hanging down from the ceiling, spray painting your bed silver. Mm-hmm. Who would have ever thought of silver bunk beds? And now when I look at that, the silver and the white of the shag rug, and I love that blown up photograph. We talked about art. Why not have a photographer come or take a picture? You know, everyone has high res cameras nowadays. Take a fabulous black and white shot of your kids and blow it up, and there's your art right. I love that.
I love that too.
There's so much going on there for so little. I mean, I bet you that room costs less than $1,000 to put together.
Oh, those are IKEA beds, I think.
Yeah.
I studied this so closely when I first saw this picture. It's funny that when I saw it, do you know who the designer is? I couldn't find it in your
They didn't use a designer. It's the husband and wife. It's the parents did it.
When I saw the, you know, the Novogratz sort of kind of coming on where we start reading a lot about them, I kept thinking, that must be, I didn't realize, you know, I didn't know how old their kids were at the time. And I kept thinking, that picture I have must be from one of their houses. Because it has that, you know, that vibe, that kind of fun.
Right. Although they have like more than double those amount of kids now. Their house, I show a lot of their work in here. Do you, mm-hmm. you want me to tell you which one? 233.
You have the girls' room and the boys' room in there, right?
Well, what did you say, Susanna? Page 233?
Well, there's a couple of things. The bedroom with their Michael Jordan opposite the Nirvana, which I think are fabulous. That's both from their rooms up in their country house. And I'll tell you the page. I really loved their boys' rooms because, obviously, having two boys, I'm always looking for new ideas. And they were so masculine and so cool at the same time. I'll find it. Hold on. It's one side is Michael Jordan and the other side is Nirvana, is Kurt Cobain, a framed picture against a really strong painted wall background. I'll find it. Oh, also on page 128 is their girls' bedroom, which I'm sure you saw with that fabulous Bali bed. Mm-hmm. And they took like fake grass and flowers from like AstroTurf and then they framed it. Look at that as art idea. I bet you that cost $100. That is page 128.
And the one you were talking about, Susanna, is 152.
Oh, thank you. I don't know why I couldn't find that. Okay. Yes. Okay, so 128 is their girls' bedroom in the city. And then 152 and 153 are their boys' beds in the country. And what I particularly loved about that 152 is the idea of that really strong, the blue, which isn't a sort of typical boy blue. It's kind of a Mediterranean blue for the wall. And then you've got that fabulous leather chair to kind of, it's almost black, to kind mm-hmm. of anchor things. And then they found that unframed painting of Michael Jordan at a flea market. And mm-hmm. the way it's overscaled like that makes
it feel... that's Bob and Courtney's house?
Yeah, mm-hmm. in the country. Yep.
Okay.
But again, I love the overscaledness of that. And it makes you think of kids, whimsy. It gives it a kind of outer-worldly effect, the room. And I think that's kind of important for kids to kind of play with scale a lot in their rooms. And you can see a lot of examples here in the book.
I love that. That's kind of, you do see that. That is a continuing theme. And that, I mean, that's really interesting that you pointed that out because it gives this cartoony sort of, so it's taking, you know, things being blown out of scale and kind of these crazy funhouse scales which makes it takes it away from being more of an adult space. That exactly. In itself makes it fun.
Always, like, for example, page 85, easy to anyone can frame a map, but what these people did in this wonderful, I believe this bedroom is in Italy, is they framed these, and some are unframed, they put mats everywhere from floor to right up onto the ceiling. How yes. It's kind of haphazard.
Yeah.
And that makes you sort of stop and have a second glance at it, and it just, again, it makes it feel almost a little Alice in Wonderland.
Well, especially Wonderland-y. With the ginormous Pinocchio.
Then you've got the Pinocchio there. I love that day bed, and it's grounded in that beautiful beige linen with the red giraffes on it. I mean, it's very, all these rooms are very thoughtfully done, but they don't take themselves too seriously. And when you have that combination of thoughtfulness and whimsicalness and a little bit of sophistication, you can't go wrong.
My favorite room is on the next page.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, that's great. Again, there's the overscaled mural.
Yeah. Who did who
page? What page?
86. Who designed this?
I do not know the design on this one. Okay. This came to me from Peter Esterson, who is a fabulous shelter photographer. He shoots for everybody from El Decor to, he did a lot in Domino. And
he does a lot for Charlotte Moss, too.
Yeah, no, he's just a great guy. And it was really fun. I went to his studio. He's the most fabulous. And I'll show you. You're going to love his son's apartment. Room is in here. I went to his beautiful penthouse apartment in Gramercy Park. He lives on the top floor. And he has a wall filled with photos, carefully chronicled. And I went in there and said, Peter, what do you have on kids' room over the past 10 years? And just out of his memory, he said, oh, yeah, this room in Italy, this room in Sweden, this room in Los Angeles. And we just picked our favorites. But what you're going to love is his room for his son. It's a nursery. And it is on what he did. He used to live in India.
Oh, I've seen this.
Mm-hmm. Right. And his rooms for his son is very, very small. And what he did, we talked about playing with this overscale images. He took a huge shot of how, it's on page 36.
Oh, right, yep.
Of where he used to live or a place near him in India. And he literally did an oversized photo of it to scale to life and used it like wallpaper. Now, how fabulous is that? It feels, it gives this exoticness to this room. And then I love how he put this old oriental carpet on the floor. Who would have ever thought, and it makes perfect sense, to put an oriental carpet in a nursery?
Well, that's amazing, that room. It looks real.
It looks real.
I mean, that photograph looks real.
And
like, the room is actually in some kind of Indian palace,
but he just used it like wallpaper. Again, all ideas. And then his crib that he picked is so simple. It's white with the brown bars, but he put on the top bumper a kind of Indian exotic Marrakesh red and white fabric. And then he's just got the oriental carpet, and that's all. And I just know that if I had a child tomorrow, my nursery, I would have so much fun with it. I would take an idea like this, and just, I thought my nursery had to be all white with little choo-choo stencils up on the top and lettering, alphabets, and a careful flowered carpet. You know, and this is so fabulous, and it's not fancy.
And people sit there and say, well, you have to have it, you know, can a child grow? A lot of people worry about that on the walls. Well, this certainly would grow a lot with a child into adulthood. I mean, you could
take
remove
it.
Yeah.
Put in his bed and you're good to go. Love
that's
that.
A fabulous idea to actually take a photo and, you know, make it canvas size and make wallpaper out of it. You know, Pure Style Home, the blog, she did that. She took a print and turned it into such a large piece of artwork, you know, a little bit larger. It could have been wallpaper. So that's really a great idea.
Another huge trend that I'm seeing, it's been around for a couple of years, but every parent will breathe a sigh of relief, are these fabulous decals, wall decals. On art.com, on the Today Show yesterday, I showed a fantasy island, like a desert island, I base it on page, let me show you the room that I base it on, you'll see what I mean. It's got the little gnome end tables. It, basically from art.com, you can order an oversized image of, say, whatever you want. But this was like a tropical island, and you just peel it right on your wall. And it instantly could transform a small space. And when your child gets sick of it, or you do, you just peel it off.
Is this the room where you actually, you didn't put the entire wall, but this time you cut out large circles of the image and put them?
It's being covered by white circles, yes. I wanted to show viewers how you could kind of get that look of covering a wall and kind of a fantasy image. Okay, it's page 168, and they seem to have put an overlay on it of white cutout dots, so it kind of blocks the picture and makes you think that you're in some kind of fabulous, almost like a spaceship looking out of these circles on this. It puts you in a context. It makes you think that you're in some fabulous treehouse or something. And what I love about the idea of this day bed is that if you don't have a lot of room and you want to have a bed slash sitting area, that's an option, or for sleepovers. But I love its sophistication, that it looks like kind of a French provincial furniture piece. But I bet it wasn't expensive. I bet it's a reproduction. And then, again, we talked about whimsy. Two little gnomes holding up little circles for the end tables. It's all about, hey, it looks good there. I'm going to try it. Because people get scared. So
yeah, I think it is. This sort of gives people a little bit of courage, you know, to go out and just try it. Do whatever it is. Go for it. If you're going to be whimsical, this is the place to do it.
It's design is one of the few times that you can plagiarize and it's okay, because no one has the exact same space.
I love the bedroom on page 81, and it's got four beds, and it's a British colonial, and they're all lined up, you know, and they all have the mosquito netting.
I was just going to say that, Joni. I was just landing on that page going, I love that.
And, you know, even, yes, they show it with these oversized, we talked about oversized stuffed animals, but if you took the stuffed animals away and you just had, I mean, that British colonial, those beds, I mean, again,
those beds are gorgeous.
Those are grown-up beds, but why shouldn't children sleep in them? They're beautiful.
Right.
And they're kind of fanciful with that netting that comes down. Kids love to get cozy no matter what the age. They love to make little forts and nooks for themselves. So it's
canopy
a great...
beds and all that.
Yeah, it's a great way to... there's a lot of canopy beds in this book.
Yeah.
And I just... there's so many ways to get inventive in making kids feel like they have a little special space with fabric draping, netting, you name it. But there's a lot of... different kinds of drape beds, and a lot of, like, look at Jonathan Adler's bed on page 61.
That's a favorite of mine. Oh, I love that.
It's so kitschy and crazy. Yeah, and then in all that fabric, it's fun to kind of, again, go crazy with the fabric, because not only does it play up the sort of fanciful, whimsical tone, but again, I think kids love to feel enveloped. Any girl would love to be in that canopy bed. The way the ceiling's so high, again, it's very exaggerated. But it's very sophisticated.
I didn't realize he did that. I have this pulled too, Joni. I've had this pulled for whenever. When did this first come out? I've always loved this room.
I know.
And I didn't even know that this was his when I pulled it. And then, of course, it made sense that he did it, because it's just so his fabulous style.
Yeah.
Another idea that's repeated several times is for children that are sharing the room. To put a curtain hanging from the ceiling, which divides the room into two.
Yes, the Mary Mecca one from Barbara Bestor, who's an architect.
Uh-huh. And then a couple pages down, there's another one.
Yes, that is a great idea. I mean, some of these things are like, oh yeah, of course that makes sense. And of course she picked a fabulous piece of fabric, that Mary Mecca pattern. And that really makes, so it's interesting. They took a weakness, meaning maybe they didn't have enough space for another bedroom. And by having the girls share a space and putting that fabulous temporary wall up, it made the room look even better. Yeah. So sometimes when we work around something, we end up getting even a better result.
How was the cover image selected? Or is that done by the publisher?
You want it to be visual. You want it to kind of speak a lot. Very quickly, I actually wanted, if I can be so bold, I was hoping to show, I was kind of leaning towards the crib on page, underneath the chandelier, page 29. That, I love that image because to me it embodies everything I wanted the book to be about, which was, it was a single mother. She lived in a loft space. She had to create a safety zone, a room for her child. She picked, actually, I think she has the same crib as Peter Esterson.
I know, I was just going to say that. It's
yeah,
the same crib.
But look how different it looks here. Yeah. She put two antique chairs covered in yummy tangerine fabric on either side of the crib, put the great artwork in a chandelier. It's just very unexpected. It kind of, to me, reflected the state of children's design today, the sophistication of it. I actually love what Rizzoli wanted more, which was this picture of the map, the, you know, the oversized map on the wall and the stuffed animal on the butt. It's a little, it's not traditional, but to me it's a little more traditional than the one that I was hoping for, but I still think it speaks volumes and it does look great. It really does.
Yeah, I think it would.
It's got more going on.
Yeah, it'd pop out on a shelf too.
It would, more colorful. And you know what, you learn, you go into it with sort of set ideas, and it's important to kind of go with your instincts and kind of fight for the things that you want on a book, and you have to kind of recognize those moments when you speak out and say, no, I really want it to be this, but then you also have to kind of know when to think, oh yeah, they're very successful book publishers, and they know what they're doing, and if they really want something for the cover, unless you really hate it, trust their instincts on that one. And so I did.
That's amazing that those are the same cribs.
I know. Look how different it looks just with the change of a bumper.
Yeah.
You can tell these are not California houses. Living in California and having babies in California, the idea of a chandelier dangling or artwork glass hanging over. I'm just looking at it going, oh, God, that must be so nice to be able to do that.
Why? Because it hurt. I mean, an earthquake, you mean?
Yeah, you don't hang things over your beds ever. Yep. It's so.
Really?
So and so just even seeing that makes me kind of gasp, like, oh God, oh God. This
That's
is not
so funny, and it would just never occur to us looking at that in a million years. But of course, yeah.
Did you have to, for the project, did you have to take any pictures, or were you able to use photographs that were already taken?
We took a few. I first relied, I mean, gosh, it would have been so nice to go out and take a million children's rooms that I've seen over the years. But actually, there was such a treasure trove of ones that had never been published that I didn't have to do that, nor did I have a budget to shoot. But I did shoot some. I shot my boys' rooms that are in the introduction. We shot a few others. A photographer that I work a lot with on for First Dibs, John Gruen, who's great, he was actually shooting some children's rooms as I was doing the book. And he was shooting the apartments for magazines, and he'd say, they have a great children's room, I'm going to just get it. And then he'd send it to me. So some things were literally shot as the book was being, as the images were being selected. Mm-hmm. But it's detective work. I mean, designers are such a great bunch to work with. I mean, they were so excited for a lot of these rooms to see the light of day. They were like, oh, there's another one and another one. And I always wish that this could have gotten, you know, in a magazine. It never did. So luckily there was so much already in existence that I didn't have to shoot very much at all. And actually some designers who had worked with John or took my recommendation, when I asked them if they had anything, they actually hired him right on the spot to go over to projects they were literally just finishing up so that he could take the kids' room.
Yeah, as you were saying, Joni, with the kids' room, you have to take that picture immediately because they're just going to move in and have their way with it.
It's going to happen.
Right.
Stickers on the wall. And,
yeah.
I like the way the book's organized, too, you know, into different, you know, the nursery, the warp play.
Oh, thank you. We struggled a lot with that. Do we do it by age? Do we do boy-girl? Do we do it... And ultimately we thought, let's not do that, because I wanted to kind of get away again from those kinds of labels. So I wanted, if you were a first-time parent and what you really cared about was a nursery right away, I wanted you to be able to just find all those in one section and not be going crazy, flipping over and over in the book, trying to go back and forth to find nurseries that you liked. I wanted them all to be together in inspirational chunk for you to just kind of go through. So I'm glad that you liked that.
Yeah. It's very organized.
It's amazing, the piece of the room on page 177, which is the work and play area, is the kind of black room with the white fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just starting a design plan for some clients for their four-year-old, and that's exactly what her bedroom looks like. It's not with the black wall, but the exact architecture.
Great. And whose room that is Jenna Leon's from J. Crew.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Rest of that room is the nursery, which is that black nursery with the yellow striped walls that is on page, in the nursery section, page 43.
Oh, okay.
Now, I got so many ideas from this room because, number one, black on a wall is so fabulous, and it's so scary to ponder. And I saw this, and I painted my whole bathroom black.
How does it look? Do you love it?
Oh my! It looks so fabulous. I can't even tell you. It's so great.
What page is that, Jenna Lyons' baby's room, Beckett's?
Oh, I just looked away from
it. 43 is one part of it, and 177 is the other part.
But that was a domino, right? That was
a domino, yeah. And how fabulous is that black mobile, the Calder mobile above the crib?
Yeah, against the
white. Wait, is that the same crib again? Yes, it is.
It's very similar. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar.
But if you polled 100 people, parents, first-time parents, and said, how do you feel about a black wall in your kid's nursery? They would faint.
They would totally.
And you love that with the yellow stripe.
With the yellow, notice how it's only on one wall, the black wall.
Yeah.
But then they did the black bureau and the yellow stripes. I mean, that's totally fabulous. And then the one white wall. But if you describe, if you were a decorator and you met with a nervous first time,
it would never happen.
So I'm thinking black wall. But how great does that look? But if you saw it in a picture, you would say, I want that tomorrow. Right. That's what I would do if I saw that. If I had a baby tomorrow, I'd probably go closest towards that. But what I loved in the fireplace shot on page 177, look at I think she used that magnetic paint so that the black, she attached the letters to it. See how it just clings?
Yeah.
So she painted a wall. That's what I was talking about. If I could give one piece of advice, get one of those magnetic chalkboards or paint a wall and have it be your ever-changing gallery. But I love how it's the white fireplace, and then on the inside of the fireplace, it's black again.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the little lambs.
So, let's say for some reason you were lucky enough to have your child has his or her own fireplace, but it's maybe not working or you don't want to do it. But it can be a beautiful piece of almost like sculpture in the room.
And I think one of the keys is having the floor is painted white, I think, in this room.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it not? Yes. I think that's really important to make these black walls work and not, and the yellow and white, again, a whimsical stripe that's yellow and white and fresh and equals happy and fun, keeps it from being goth-like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It keeps the happy colors. And then I love in this fireplace, she has little stuffed white toy sheep in where the logs go. So the fireplace almost becomes like a little stage set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So many ideas from that. I mean, I just would never have thought of that in a million years.
You know, those beds that I've seen, I think it's Hive Modern. I also have a friend that has a line that looks just like that, very modern bed. And she once said to me, you know, when she first started out, she said, I have a problem selling these because people, especially first timers, are really concerned about all the sharp edges. Mm-hmm. But apparently it doesn't, I think that's one of those new mom things where you get so freaked out by everything. You might as well just get a big plastic bubble.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that if a first time parent, even though these rooms that are for tweens seem so far away, it will be there before they know it. And it's fun to kind of hopefully look ahead to the next stage and get ideas and think, okay, what am I going to do next? What can we do together? It's all about honoring a child's imagination, and that if you give them the space they deserve, they're not going to trash it. I think people automatically expect disaster, and children will surprise you every time. They really will.
Well, that always seems to be the mantra for so many people is, oh, I can't have anything nice until my kids grow up. My kids will trash it. And it's just this assumption, yes, they will trash it, and they don't even give them the opportunity not to.
My son, I think those are the same parents that call baby proofers.
Exactly. My son treats his desk with the little things on his desk, the little kid robots and the little bobbleheads, and he has little cactuses and little bamboo plants. I mean, he really enjoys the kind of landscape of his desk as much as I do mine. And he's not sort of overly concerned with how it looks, but he just enjoys it. And how is that any different than the way I enjoy my bureau with my jewelry? I mean, it's the same thing. It's just giving him his space, giving him his things, and he loves it, and he takes such good care of it.
You know, it's funny because I often hear people say, I can't have drapes in my house, curtains, you know, long drapes.
Oh, yeah.
Because my kids will climb on them.
Right.
They'll strangle themselves in them.
Who allows that? I mean, come on, you know.
Drapes.
And I think the mere admission that your child could and would possibly do that means that you don't have your rules set up in your house. You know, safety rules. Let's start with the safety of
right.
that. You know,
right.
but Just, again, you know, they're the ones putting the locks on the toilets.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, Susanna, this has been really great to talk to you about your new book. Is there anything else? What else is going on for you? What's any books in the works?
Yes, there's a couple. There's a book that I'm doing, just putting the formal kind of contract touches on it now. I'm working with Oberto Gili. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's really, to me, one of the world's best photographers. And he has a treasure trove. I mean, basically, since House and Garden, over the past 20 years, he has shot some of the most fabulous drop-dead houses around the world, as well as his own house in Italy, which is what inspired me to do a whole book. I wanted to originally do it just on his house in Italy. It's so fabulous. And then we ended up deciding to do a whole book on houses around the world that he shot and the amazing people behind them. So I am going to do that this summer with him. We have all the photographs, thank God. It's so exciting to be working with one photographer and all the images are in. I mean, it's from the 1960s all the way up till last month. I mean, they're incredible. And then I'm also working on another idea about decorating, which I will reveal soon. It's sort of very much more in the percolating stages. And I do my Today shows every month. And actually, one other thing that I'm doing, which is fun, I'll invite your listeners. I'm doing a new series with iVillage. I'm a contributing editor there, sort of celebrating how easy it is to make over your room without spending more than a couple of $100. It's often just about editing and buying a few key pieces. So people are submitting in their problem rooms, rooms that maybe they've looked at a million times, they've lived with for many years, and they just don't know why it doesn't quite work. And I come in and we talk about it, and then I bring in a few key pieces and make some edits, and they get to keep this stuff and see how easy and inexpensive it really is. Because I do it all the time with friends. I want it to be chatty and fun and informal and help people that have sort of blocks on it, room blocks, you know? We all have. Thank you so much again for devoting your time to talking about it. We could all talk another 10 hours about parents.
I know.
And imaginative children that live with them. So thank you so much.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we were joined by author and television personality Susanna Salk talking about her new book, Room for Children. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.